This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Tan Chung Han and Melissa Idris. It is the 4th of July, a day because we associate with the independence of the United States of America. They're going to be celebrating.
Oh, yes.
Yes, but because in Malaysia today, many people will be tuned to their television sets or their radio sets, anticipating the charging of the former Prime Minister of Malaysia.
I thought you were going to say fireworks because of the 4th of July, but I guess in a way fireworks as well. Maybe some legal fireworks.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking along the lines of, you know, as America celebrates its freedom, you've got one man whose freedom has been curtailed.
Well, I know he's not been convicted yet. So the distinction is that
he's arrested.
He's arrested, and yes, he's been he was held overnight at the MACC headquarters in Putrajaya. He's expected to be brought to court this morning at about 8:30. The KL High Court, I believe, is the venue. The question is whether he will get bail or not on this charge, because I think that will perhaps address the issue of whether he remains free until proven guilty. And that is going to be another interesting dimension, I believe, of what's going to happen this morning.
Right, and also the nature of the charges. Now, we have heard rumors so far, but, you know, again, like you said, 8:30 a.m. this morning, we're set to find out those exact charges, you know, because we have seen that 2.6 billion ringgit, that number is etched into the minds of so many Malaysian voters. You know, we want to see the exact nature of those charges and how it relates to that 2.6 billion and whether this will be the first of a series of charges that are set to be presented against the former premier.
Yeah, of course, some media speculation is that at least this morning he'll be facing 10 counts of criminal breach of trust related to the SRC International, which is a subsidiary of 1MDB. I believe there are two numbers to be looking at. One is at 2.6 billion, the other is 46 million coming from SRC. So those are the numbers to be looking at. But at any rate, we'll have some clarity at 8:30, and we're going to be bringing you live coverage of this morning's events.
Remember, guys, this is a marathon, not a foot race. It's going to be a while, so it's not going to all end today at 8:30. It's the beginning of a very long marathon, what is likely to be a lengthy legal proceeding.
And of course, you can be part of this protracted conversation by tweeting us at BFM Radio, WhatsApping us at 018-789-8899. That's 018-789-8899. Melissa, we have a Twitter poll.
Oh, we do have a Twitter poll. Now, what happened was yesterday we saw there was an Instagram post by the daughter of Rosma Manso. This is Noriana Najwa Najib. So Rosma Dato' Sri Najib Razak and Datin Sri Rosma Manso's daughter, Noriana Najib. She posted on her Instagram, she's urging Malaysians to spare a thought for her father after his arrest. So she says, let's just think of him this one time when he needs us the most. You can paint a man black, but Allah knows. So that was on her post. And our Twitter poll is,
I love the way people make reference to God. God is always believed to be on their side in any of these things. I think it was an American president once said, you know, well, perhaps the issue is not whether, you know, God is on your side, but you are on God's side. I think that is perhaps the philosophical distinction for those of you who believe in God.
Well, you know, today is also, well, yesterday, the day of the arrest, was also the anniversary of that expose. So 3 years almost to the day when Malaysians woke up to the news that 2.6 billion ringgit had flowed into Najib Razak's accounts, he's then being arrested.
Right, you know, 3 years on. And going back to invoking the name of God, that's exactly what Dato' Sri Najib did in his Facebook post, which was released just last night. Right, Sharad?
Mm. Yes, in fact, we have a clip from that just to give you a sense. If you missed this, it's something you might want to put as your ringtone.
Assalamualaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh. Rakyat Malaysia yang dikasihi, sekiranya saudara-saudari mendengar mesej ini, maknanya tindakan sudah pun mula diambil ke atas saya. Saya ingin memohon ampun dan maaf kepada rakyat Malaysia. Rakyat Malaysia berhak mendapat pimpinan yang terbaik. Saya sudah lakukan sedaya upaya saya, namun saya sedar ia tidak mencukupi kerana saya akui ada banyak kelemahan. Namun demikian, saya juga ingin menyuarakan isi hati saya kepada rakyat Malaysia yang sangat saya kasihi. Ya, memang saya tidak sempurna seperti manusia biasa. Namun percayalah, apa yang dituduh ke atas saya dan keluarga tidak semuanya benar. Memang rumah kami digeledah selama berhari-hari. Memang saya disiasat dan ada barang yang dirampas. Namun semua ini belum konklusif. Ada banyak berita, gambar yang tersebar bersifat khabar angin palsu, putar belit dan fitnah. Biarlah siasatan dijalankan dahulu. Saya belum berpeluang untuk mempertahankan diri saya. Ya, saya sudah tewas dan saya akur keputusan rakyat. Dan saya sedar bahawa kekalahan ini juga bermakna saya terdedah kepada lebih banyak tumpahan yang dahsyat. Benar, semua orang adalah sama rata di sisi undang-undang. Bukan sahaja di dunia, tapi juga balasan di akhirat. Tiada sesiapa yang akan terlepas, termasuklah yang penguasa di dalam kerajaan hari ini. Dan mereka yang menyebar khabar angin serta mengaibkan orang lain. Saya terima bahawa hari ini adalah hari saya dan keluarga menjalani dugaan dunia. Saya tetap bersyukur kerana tidak semua yang berpeluang menjalani dugaan dunia. Kita semua tahu bahawa dugaan di akhirat adalah jauh lebih perit. Saya akan hadapi dengan tabah. Sesungguhnya Allah Subhanahu Wa Taala Maha Mengetahui, Maha Mengasihani dan Maha Penyayang. Sekian sahaja dari saya. Wassalamualaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh.
That was the former Prime Minister Najib Razak making an appeal for sympathy through his Facebook page.
Yeah, so if you hadn't watched this video, this message was not only set to, you know, that melancholic score, but also against the backdrop of many images of Najib, many of which showed him praying. Mm. And I guess it's just his way of saying, I really love how he began. I mean, if you're receiving this message, means I have been arrested.
Right. Obviously, yeah, this was recorded and produced prior to his arrest,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, how early do you reckon this was?
Yeah, I mean, keeping
recorded
in mind that it's only, well, it's been less than 2 months since GE14, you know, so it's sometime within those 2 months, obviously. But obviously, you know, he had enough premonition to preempt this and actually produce this video.
I think maybe a question to note, the dimension of this to note is that he goes down not just personally, but he brings with him an illustrious a Malay political family with him. Mm-hmm. His father's reputation, his mother, who I believe is still alive, his siblings also, the question is to what extent they're going to be caught up in the dragnet. Implications for UMNO's long-term political capital, but something we'll explore shortly. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Melissa Idris and Tan Chung Han. And we're back with a deeper dive into the events this morning, which are going to be unfolding. We have the arrest of Najib Razak yesterday. But before we go on, just to, if you're interested in the name of that song, that was My Mistake by the Split Ends. Or Split Ends. I don't know if that's a group or an individual, but it was a very nice song. All I can say, I love the trumpets.
And apt.
Okay. And if you have time, why not join our Twitter poll? We ask if the daughter of Najib Razak and Rosman Mansour's call for sympathy for her father at this point in his own professional life has moved you. And so far, we have 4% saying yes, feel for the family, 13% saying no, I'm angry at the allegations, and 83% saying no, leave it to the courts. Hmm. Though we did have one message saying that we shouldn't, in fact, bring her into the limelight. Hasrul Rosli says, think it's best not to put her in the limelight. It's just a prayer of a daughter for her father. She, of course, did put this into the public realm. She hashtagged it, pray for Dato' Sri Najib DSN, protect civil liberties and so on and so forth. So she actually put this call out publicly.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure whether... So this was on her Instagram post, wasn't it? I should probably check whether that was Instagram post or a public Instagram post. But all I know is picked up by the media this morning.
Okay. Also, Hadi Azmi, thank you so much. You asked for Bank Robber by The Clash, and
I think we're endeavoring to find that song at this point in time. Now, also, you know, many things are happening in 2008 that we didn't expect to happen. Sorry, 2018 that we didn't expect to happen. We had, of course, the unexpected victory of Pakatan Harapan in the polls. We also have the unexpected victory of England against Colombia now going through to the next round in the World Cup. So they're not going home, not just yet.
Yeah, look, 2018 is a year when anything is possible. It's not just that England defeated Colombia, but it's how they did it. So England, for the first time in their World Cup history, has won a penalty shootout. Okay, so once again, 2018, anything is possible.
Yeah, and you know, Malaysia, because exemplary headlines across the world, the defeat of one of the most resilient governments since the World War, that is the government of Barisan Nasional, first, of course, in the form of the Alliance, then its successor, Barisan Nasional. It fell against all expectations, and then now, you know, showing that democracy can work against corruption, or at least high-profile corruption in government, as alleged.
Yeah, so, you know, in, I think, the interview that Najib had with Malaysia Kini, the interview that keeps on giving, there was a couple mentions about the gifts that, you know, the loot that was found in his residences. He said, well, those were gifts that were accumulated over the years. So I guess, you know, Malaysia Kini, being the reputable news portal that they are, they did some digging to fact-check some of the allegations that Najib made in that interview. Najib Najib made claims that Michelle Obama was given a very expensive gift by the then Saudi king. He also made allegations that Mahathir received 40 horses. So Malaysia Kini found that yes, Michelle Obama did receive a diamond and pearl jewelry set by King Abdullah back in 2014. It was valued between $560,000 to $570,000. But those gifts apparently were logged and registered and put on display at the National Archives and Records Administration, so the public could see it.
Right. So he didn't. He only got half the story. So
he missed out that last bit.
She had logged it. Then maybe things would have turned out very differently for him.
Right. I mean, look. When it comes to gifts that are being given to leaders of state, it's one thing that if it's abundant in, say, symbolism, right? Say, I remember President Xi Jinping getting a jersey with his name on the back. You know, that's one thing, right? But when these gifts become a race of sorts to extravagance, then that's a whole different story, right? Because at the end of the day, these are public servants.
But, you know, the U.S. Foreign Gifts Act stipulates that any U.S. federal employees must only get gifts under the amount of $390. So you can't get anything more than that.
But you got millions? Value.
So that's, but you can keep those gifts that are under US dollars. Anything more than that, you have to declare.
Right. Well, the issue here is influence, right? So influence peddling, So the idea that government officials will be under the sway of those gift givers, that is the issue. Now, if you're giving gifts in the millions, and in what we understand is actually a history of gift giving that has gone into over a billion ringgit. Now, if that didn't come with strings attached, I'd be very surprised. But that's merely the expectation. And I think, I guess, if you're a politician, you want to guard against the expectation that you are under the sway or influence of others. We'll be back with a look at compulsive shopping. Don't ask us why. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Joan Jett and the Blackhearts with Bad Reputation. Blackhearts, I love that.
You should do a bit of headbanging in the morning.
With Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, it almost is something quite approving. It's almost a positive image of the Blackhearts, but because somebody who's blackhearted is not good.
And
not
bad good reputations at all. Either.
Okay. Remember, you can join us in this conversation either through you know, direct messages to us via our Twitter handle, BFM Radio, WhatsApping us at 018-789-8899, or you can join our poll. We have a poll going right now, and we have over 100 votes. Interesting poll. I won't tell you what it is. Take a look at your Twitter feed. And if you're not following BFM, you really ought to. over 200,000 people too. Okay, it's time to look at the question. It's something that's gone to the heart of the drama in the last month or so, since May 9th, which is revelations of luxury purchases or luxury gifts of an astounding number. So what's going on there? Is this about retail therapy?
Well, I don't. Okay, so you know, the if you remember the amount of jewelry that was seized from the six residences linked to Datuk Seri Najib Razak and Datin Seri Rosmaman, so over 12,000 pieces of jewelry was seized from those residences. And, you know, in an interview, again, to cite the interview with Malaysia Kini, that Najib said that he was not aware of the extent of his wife's collection of jewellery and other items, stating that he is like any other husband in that respect. If your wife has 12,000 pieces of jewellery, I would notice. If my partner had that, I would notice.
Because I think you had to have six safes to actually hold all this jewelry.
Even if my partner had 12,000 pieces of Lego pieces, yeah. I would notice this, let alone.
Does he?
You'll notice and you'll be worried.
Yeah.
It's trouble.
So is the question, I mean, what I've seen going around social media, guys, is that, you know, they were saying, well, this is a real addiction. In fact, it's bordering on perhaps a sickness. We may not be able to diagnose this. I mean, this is not something you can diagnose remotely, but it brought up the question of whether there is such a sickness as retail addiction.
You know, I must say, I, you know, in my own personal kind of family situation, I've had individuals in the family criticized for their retail, you know, therapy strategies during times of heightened crisis. And I said to, you know, and I can mention my father here, I said, well, you know, you like to have your whiskey when you're, you know, feeling tense, and somebody else likes to go shopping. I mean, really, for me, they're part of the same continuum in terms of our
making us feel
responses.
Better. Yeah.
Yeah, and we look for comfort, right? And so if you have find comfort in whiskey, or you find comfort in buying another Swatch watch or a handbag, in this case, it was, I believe, it was high heel shoes.
Not for yourself, perhaps. All right, so
I was sure. Defending somebody.
Right, sure you were. Okay, but look, the definition of addiction, right? Now that becomes truly subjective, right? Because say if, you know, 10 pairs of high heel shoes for that Sherrod's acquaintance, you know, that might be normal.
Sherrod's friend asking for a friend.
Okay, so when it goes beyond function, let's put it this way. If you have two watches, okay, so there's function and maybe a bit of fashion, right? Because you want to switch things around. But if you have 300 watches, then the question is, and when it leads you to perhaps start to undermine your own personal finances, right? If you do it at the expense of your personal finances, or in this instance, at the expense of the public coffers.
Right. You know, so again, right, it's so subjective. There are so many factors that go into how you define it as addiction, right? And there are many levels between, say, a hobby, a collection, and then all the way to addiction.
Right.
It's one thing for Jay Leno to, you know, have warehouses full of classic cars, antique cars, and it's another thing for myself to go out there and, you know, just waste away all my money and buy half a car because that's all I can afford.
But if it's a hobby, hun?
Well, yeah. So, you know, if it's a hobby, and I think what Sherrod already pointed out, if it doesn't undermine my my personal finances, then I think this sounds like a ringgit and cents episode,
yeah,
right here.
It could be an
it?
Investment as well for right. the future. Invest in handbags.
But let's say if an individual has it without expense to the public coffers, then what's wrong with that?
Absolutely. Tell us what you think. Remember, tweet us, WhatsApp us, or join the Twitter poll. Taking us to the first bulletin of the morning, Karma Police by Radiohead. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, The Clash with a Bank Robber. I'm Sherrod Kutin. With me, Melissa Idris and Tan Chung Han. Now, yesterday, a crowd of some 50 people converged outside the MACC headquarters in Putrajaya chanting Hidup Najib and Tangkap Mahathir. They are, and you don't have to be a genius to figure this out, supporters of the former Prime Minister Najib Abdul Razak, now arrested by the MACC and expected at the KL High Court this morning at 8:30.
So not just those chants, not just Hidup Najib and Tangkap Mahathir, but also Undur DAP was also heard. The group was led by UMNO Supreme Council member Lokman Nur Adam. They were carrying candles, like a candlelight vigil.
And on top of that, they had a song as well.
There's a song.
Yeah, I was watching it a little bit before I went to bed. Yeah, bad choice there.
Was it Bank Robber by The Clash?
Okay, so some people are saying, oh, well, now, you know, I'm no activist, know what it feels like to be on that side of the political divide, because for years, NGO activists, defenders of civil liberties, activists with opposition political parties often found themselves in the position of having to hold candlelight vigils. And also often under the threat of the Federal Reserve Unit, FRU, when doing so. But the question is that a really valid comparison? Because those will people be defending democracy. What exactly are those 50 people defending?
But you know, what I think is important is that the right to peaceful assembly, right? So, you know, you whatever your cause, whatever you want to support, if you have, you know, democracy is about giving people the right for peaceful assembly. If you want to go and shout Tangkap Mahathir and Hidup Najib, that is your democratic right.
Well, now, going back to this comparison, so it's a comparison of the prosecution of the former Prime Minister versus what, Tun Dr. Mahathir or Dato Sri Anwar?
Well, I can't imagine what the logic of all those different chants are, but what it is either it's anti the current government, of whom the responsibility of this arrest will be, whose feet it will be laid before. Most importantly, I guess it's a show of support. So if you looked at and you followed what was happening on social media and Twitter and so on, there was a call for people to rally. It says, Hanya do a jam. Let's make effort for the Prime Minister, because he's competing with the World Cup, and just about everybody can't. You know, nobody can compete against the World Cup.
Well, to be fair with them, they actually started at 8 p.m. and I think closed on 9 p.m. or something, so before the World Cup, because there were some people commenting, saying, okay, we're going to watch this until the World Cup match kicks off, then we'll go
over to the mama. UMNO General Assembly's break for the World Cup. Now, hey. So everybody realizes...
Priorities, man, come on.
It's not just priorities, it's just reality. People's attentions are distracted. But, you know, the other thing, of course, is for us who are perhaps less sympathetic to the cause of Najib Razak, we're saying... There's overwhelming evidence in 7 jurisdictions internationally. One MDB was seen as having been involved in some dodgy deals, which the government of Najib Razak denied vehemently.
Mm.
In the face of all that evidence, how could you continue to support this man?
Right. I mean, look, you see this play out so often in so many economies, right? You know, when faced with these evidence, right, this tribal mentality then sinks in. And it's either driven by political survival or, you know, identities or, you know, group identities. Then that compels them to hold on to this narrative, you know, despite the evidence that's presented to them, right?
And sure.
You hear those comments from the gathering last night, and they were then saying that, oh, now all these other media outlets who were there covering it, you know, they were accusing them of propaganda, right? So it's something that really catches hold of the tribe.
Yeah, so I kind of hear what you're saying, because it depends on what your priorities are. I also think it's where your moral compass points, right? So I was having lunch yesterday with, you know, and of course this came up with a bunch of colleagues, media colleagues, and they said, well, you know, Najib Razak has done so much for the country. Does it outweigh, I mean, does that not factor into any consideration of a trial by public or trial by media? And I think for me, it was really about which outweighed the other. And it depends on, you know, your own moral compass. If certain things outweigh the good that you've done, then you're a bad person. If you good outweighs the bad that we've done, you're, you know,
you might even not want to come to one conclusion about an individual, but I like the use of moral compass, because I think the story that Malaysia is telling the world today is that populist sentiment, right? The collective moral compass of Malaysians was spot on May 9th. And that despite all the belief that Malaysians are trapped within a race politics mentality, that we're given to feudal politics and, you know, patronage politics and money buys our vote, Malaysians demonstrated overwhelmingly that we reject leadership that is corrupt, at least at that point alleged to be impalpably so corrupt. So I think our national moral compass is spot on at this point in time.
Right, you know, certainly, and I agree with you there. But then now it's it's imperative that we continue portraying that same message as well, because, you know, again, say take Donald Trump, for example, right? You know, despite this so-called evidence that is, you know, pointing towards, you know, poor policy, yet you've got really ardent supporters on his side. So it's very careful that this evidence doesn't, you know, morph into or evolve into some kind of propaganda of sorts, and we start, you know, losing that moral higher ground.
Okay, we'll be back to look at the trial by social media of Najib Razak. BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad Kutin with me, Melissa Idris and Tan Chung Han. That was Fats Domino with Everybody's Got Something to Hide Except for Me and My Monkey.
I don't know about your monkey.
I don't have a monkey. I've had friends with
Everybody's got something to hide, Sharad. What are you hiding this morning? Apart from your monkey.
Well, I was trying to hide my stomach, but apparently that's not. That's in full view. I'm sorry. But thankfully, this is radio, not
no one
television.
Can see you.
Okay. So apart from fat shaming, which could happen anywhere in the studio,
sorry,
even on social media. Social media, of course, is the premier platform for all things that are relevant to the, you know, the general populace, right? And so that is the premier. And you have to kind of prove your innocence or guilt or make $1 million or whatever, become famous. It has to happen on social media. The trial of Najib Razak, is it likely to be concluded on social media before it even begins in the courts?
Right, and that's the key thing, right? Because judging by social media, at least, you know, based on your network, you know, this is vindication of years of, you know, accusations that have been hurled at him, right? And many people were rejoicing or expressing their delight at the thought of the former premier having to spend a night in lockup, you know, with the either purple or orange outfit. I can't remember what the distinction is, right? But then, you know, what happens to the principle of innocent until proven guilty? You know, yeah.
And also, I think you'd need to add to that list, it's not purely accusations that have been held over the last year. It is investigations over seven jurisdictions that included the Department of Justice in the U.S., a seizure of assets, the almost naming of the man himself in those documents. So many things, actually, more than just, you know, opinion spewed by those who are his political rivals.
Right, you know, but then where, so the question that we are considering here is then where do you draw the line, or has he been proven guilty yet?
But no one is actually calling out for his, I mean, calling out his guilt, right? What I'm seeing on social media is really kind of celebratory, right? So it's just that perhaps Malaysians, many Malaysians, want to see some form of accountability or someone to take accountability for this, this massive scandal that's happened that no one has been charged for. So perhaps just the act of, you know, arresting and going and you know, going to be charged later this morning is enough to make people hopeful and celebrate.
Well, also notice that on social media, it really is a level playing field. The former prime minister has gone on Facebook to plead his case, and he did that in a recorded statement. We played earlier, we'll probably repeat that thing, that recording, where he makes his case. His daughter has come out on Instagram to make a case for the family and for sympathy for her father. So it is in some ways a very democratic space. All sides get a chance to make their case.
I think sometimes silence speaks more. So the people who were very, very, very vocal, all the UMNO supporters previously vocal on social media, have been deafeningly quiet overnight.
Well, actually, they did have a small protest yesterday. Of 50
and they did
people.
Chant, right. But I'm talking about on social media. I haven't seen much.
And we actually invited a couple of them onto this morning's episode of The Morning Run. And, you know, yeah, Mel, you're exactly right. One response was, all I got was, noted your request, and that was it, you know. So, you know, we have made repeated calls since GE14 for Barisan national leaders to come on the program. And, yeah, you know, you're right. We have been stonewalled, so to speak. So,
well, what is interesting is Tun Faizal, who is and was the leader of the
social media unit.
Actually, the Special Affairs Department of JASA. He was
JASA,
a strategic communications director, Tun Faizal Ismail, as is his full name.
JASA is now defunct, if I'm not mistaken.
It is defunct. And he was at the rally yesterday. And I do see him on Twitter. I continue to see him on Twitter. I wonder, though, why it is that many of these voices have become been reluctant to go to mainstream media and to plead their case.
Well, yeah. Last tweet from Tin Faisal was 13 hours ago. Maybe he's still asleep.
Well, you know, they, I mean, to be fair, I have seen some attempts to, try and defend Dato' Sri Najib, you know, not just the 50 voices that were there at the vigil, you know, but, you know, at the same time, then you've got Dato' Sri Zahid Hamidi, right? In the press conferences following his testimonies to MACC, he's not willing to, you know, come out fully and also defend his former boss, saying that let justice take its course. So that seems to be the default answer right now.
And it seems a sensible position. One to make, right? Because at some point, the party has to decide whether it's going to sink and swim with this one man, or are they going to distance themselves, try to recoup their reputation among Malaysians, recoup their reputation among their own rank and file, many of whom abandoned them at the last general elections that led to their defeat and to the capture of federal power by Pakatan. So, you know, there is a lot of work to be done with UMNO. I wonder if they want to invest so much energy in defending Najib Razak.
Do you not think that the small turnout yesterday is indicative of the fact that perhaps there's not that much grassroots support for this?
It might be a question of momentum, though.
50
I mean,
people turned up, right?
Yeah, but it could be a momentum as things pick up. As we expect, he's going to be charged this morning. What will happen then? Will the troops rally? It takes some time, often, for these things to build up. Now we're building up to the next bulletin. Then we'll be back with a deeper dive into the events today. Stay tuned. Stay with us. BFM 89.9. Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Melissa Idris and Tan Chung Han. It is the 4th of July, and we're taking you up to all the way to 10 o'clock this morning, not just with a range of interviews, news and analysis, but those are surrounding the major events of this morning. We expect the former Prime Minister, Najib Razak, to be brought to the KL High Court to be charged formally. Mm-hmm. Media speculating as to what those charges are. There's a suggestion that at least today, 10 charges will be brought against him for criminal breach of trust. And this is involving transactions with SRC International, a former subsidiary of 1MDB.
So we put up a bit of a poll on social media, on Twitter, and really it's just, I guess, to gauge the sentiment of social media response of people on Twitter to see how they feel. This is after a post by the daughter of Dato' Sri Najib Razak asking for, I guess, a little bit of sympathy or to think of a father at the time when he needs it the most.
Right. So there's a personal element to this as well. And also we spoke about the principles that are involved or that are at stake when it comes to how we view and judge this saga, which is bound to be a protracted saga, right? For example, the principle of innocent until proven guilty. Are we prejudging here? Are we allowed to? Is it the exception, you know, given the overwhelming evidence or, you know, investigations that are going on, right? So many components to this, do we risk undermining our own principles as we react to what's going on?
And I believe the Malaysian Bar has also raised questions about who ordered the arrest of Najib Razak. Was it the task force? Was that done in a way that was legal? Mm-hmm. Is the task force, in fact, empowered to make arrests? Task force, of course, includes an individual from the MAC, the head of the MACC. Did the arrest come from the MACC? So I guess in Malaysia Baru, if you like the expression, rule of law is very important, and you'll find that people will be nitpicking precisely because lapses with regard to the rule of law led to the debacle that we had over the last couple of decades, in particular under the administration of Najib Razak. So to give us a better sense of whether we're of what the legal situation, the legal dimension of the arrest, we spoke to lawyer Dato' Vignesh Kumar from Vignesh Kumar & Associates. He's a former deputy public prosecutor in the Commercial Crimes Unit of the Attorney General's Chamber. I asked him to clarify if the MACC does in fact have powers to arrest an individual.
No, MACC actually conferred with all the powers that have been given to the police, where they can exercise these powers in accordance with the criminal code. And it is wrong to say that the MACC does not have the power to arrest. In fact, they do have all the powers, as I've said, given to a police officer.
So when we spoke to Dr. Vignesh yesterday, we asked him, like, based on his professional experience, what would he think, what would happen next?
I've read the statement made by the Pasukan Petugas HA. When a person is arrested, the authorities have an option within the 24 hour of the arrest, either to produce before a magistrate to obtain a remand order or to charge the person in court. Now, assuming Dr. Srinajib is charged in court tomorrow, then his lawyers will have to apply for bail in court. Bail is an absolute discretion of the judge. The judge may or may not grant bail. There will be reasons the prosecutors may seek that bail not to be granted. And of course, Dr. Srinajib's lawyers will make a case as to why a bail should be granted.
Now, following up on the question of bail, we then asked Dato Vignesh if there is a chance that bail will not be granted to Dato Srinajib. I mean, given that the authorities have suspended his passport, have banned him from travelling out of the country, etc.
Well, over the years, I think the courts tend to give bail at the first instance, unless it can be shown by the prosecution with some credible evidence that this person is a flight risk. I think the lawyers for Dato' Srinajib will make a case to say that he has cooperated fully with investigation. You know, he's a former prime minister and so on. He has, you know, over 40 years political career in this country, you know, and that kind of thing. So, of course, as per the law, it's a non-available offense, but it certainly gives the judicial discretion to the judges to look at, you know, the facts, as I've alluded earlier, whether he's a flight risk or otherwise, to grant bail. And in addition to that, court can attach conditions such as, you know, passport to be surrendered to court, having the accused to report to nearest police station, for instance. So there are many ways to secure the attendance of the accused to court. Because you have to bear in mind, the purpose of bail is actually to secure the attendance of the accused in court.
Now, knowing that this is likely to be a very high-profile case, we asked Vignesh what kind of time frame we're looking at in terms of the prosecution.
Criminal prosecution will take time, and they are safeguarded under the law. When a person is charged, first of all, the issue of bail will come into place, and later on, there will be many case managements after that, where, you know, parties will have to, the prosecution will have to provide documents to the defense. The defense then, you know, may or may not make representations to the attorney general to review the charges and things like that. So by the time it comes for trial, it may take up to you know, 6 months to a year by usual standards. So you're right. The public are expecting a lot from this trial. You know, the law itself creates a lot of safeguards for the accused, and I believe, as mentioned by the Prime Minister, that you know, he will make sure the rule of law will prevail. I believe that you know, the law and the courts will extend its the fullest protection given to any accused person.
We also asked Vignesh if he has any idea what Dato' Srinajib might be charged with.
Well, based on what I've read, you know, in the media, the possible charges would probably be under Section 17A of the MACC Act. And possibly Section 409 for criminal breach of trust, Section 403 for criminal misappropriation of property. These are three things that I could think of.
Finally, we ask him if there is any situation where Dato' Srinajib can invoke any sort of immunity.
Definitely not. Everyone is, you know, subjected to the law, and the office of a former PM does not warrant him any kind of immunity.
That was Vignesh Kumar, former Deputy Public Prosecutor in the Commercial Crimes Unit of the Attorney General's Chambers, helping us trying to understand the events that will be unfolding today. We had the arrest of the former Prime Minister, Najib Razak, yesterday in the afternoon. He stayed overnight at the MACC headquarters in Putrajaya. He's expected to be brought to the KL High Court this morning at 8:30.
Right. So the three things that we're going to be looking out for is will be if the what what the charges are going to be, so specifically under what acts. Also, if there's going to be bail posted. I like that Vignesh explained what the purpose of bail is, really. It's to secure the attendance of the accused in court. So,
Say that this was a non-bailable offense.
That's right.
Depending on what the charges
are. Depending on what the charges are, depending on the discretion of the judge, whether the person is a flight risk or not. The other thing that I think I'll be watching quite closely, or the thing I would bear in mind as all of this kicks off, is, you know, Vignesh brought this up, that this may take up to 6 months to a year. It's going to be a long process once the trial starts. And I wonder whether the public hunger for accountability or any form of, you know, sentencing would last that long.
Yeah, you know, so points there to Dato Vignesh for helping us manage our expectations. Yes. There, at least, you know, in terms of us trying to get to the bottom of this and trying to see a legal resolution to this saga that has been going on since 2015, right? 3 years and counting. You know, but I guess, you know, at the same time, as we continue to be vigilant, and we will keep you posted on the developments right here on BFM 89.9, as I'm sure other local media outlets will be grasping at every single development is there. You know, I think it's also a sign, right, you know, with this patience that's required of us, hopefully it points to a more mature democracy as well, you know, that we'll be able to take this in stride and still continue to, you know, move forward in this Malaysia Baharu.
Also, you can look forward to a range of voices coming on this morning. We have Bridget Welt, Professor of Political Science at John Cabot University. We also have Lin Chi Chow, former KL Bar Criminal Practice Committee Chairman. Tony Pua, MP for Damansara. Cynthia Gabriel, anti-corruption activist. Wong Chin Wat, political analyst from Penang Institute. A range of people who are coming in are going to be weighing in on this thing. So stay with us on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.